Blog Talk Radio.
It is Tuesday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the Pugilist Corner, presented by the Sports Crib Network. Well, we have a great show in store for everyone tonight. We have the winners of the PBS card, Mr. Tony Harrison, and also Mr. Caleb Plant. And we have a young prospect out of Florida, Mr. Miguel Flores, young welterweight prospect. We'll be talking to him, close up the show. Right now, let's get started with the victorious Mr. Tony Harrison. Tony, how are we doing tonight, my man?
Everything good, man. Another day in paradise.
I've heard Detroit called a lot of things, my man. Now, you know, I'm originally from Cleveland, but paradise is one that's kind of new to me.
And paradise is whatever you make it, man. I made Detroit that.
I hear you, man. You know, I remember, you know, the great days of Detroit with, you know, Mr. Emanuel Stewart, my mentor as well as yours. Everything that came out of Crump Gym. But Tony, before we start talking a little bit about boxing, man, let's talk a little bit about you. And some of the things you do. It's evident that you really love Detroit. You do everything that you can for the community. We've seen you participate in all types of sports events. I believe last year you were talking to one of the IndyCars winningest drivers. Tony, what was that experience like, man? Being around, you know, somebody that's able to go that fast on you know, the weekend, man. I mean, damn.
It was just another experience, man, that I had never encountered. You know, a whole another lane, you know, different than mine. You know what I mean? But at a high level, though, you know what I mean. He's I like talking to high level guys, and he's one of those guys at a high level in his sport. You know what I mean? So it was just another different avenue for me to kind of explore in, and for me to kind of brush shoulders with good people.
Most definitely. That was one thing that Emmanuel always stressed to me, and I'm sure he expressed the same to you. You know, you surround yourself with good people. You make sure that you stay around the right type of people, and, you know, good things will come to you. Have you found those words to be very truthful coming from a mentor?
I've been living those words ever since, man, and I've been having, you know, I found good luck in them.
Most definitely, man. I mean, you know, even though it's only been a couple of years, you know, since Emmanuel's passed, I mean, to those of us that were close to him, it seems like a lifetime. Tony, what is your most memorable experience with the great Emmanuel Stewart?
If I answered that, that'd be so hard to explain, man. You know, every moment with him was kind of like, you know, a memorable moment because it was always something happening. You know what I mean? So, just every day with him was just a, you know, a blessing, man. And, you know, if I can have all the time back, man, I'd take them all back. So, you know, I had a lot of good times with him. So,
you know, I think a lot of people have the wrong concept of Crown Gym. Because when we think of Emmanuel and all of his great contributions and all of his champions, a lot of people are under the misconception of, you know, Crown Gym, you know, being one of these plush places where, you know, you guys go and hang out and, you know, kind of like Floyd's place, you know, where there's a lot of levity and, you know, I mean, you know, everybody's well-known and, you know, you got the entourages and all that. But Emmanuel wasn't about nothing like that. Neither was Crown Gym. Tell people a little bit about Crown Gym and your experience.
Oh, man. Man, the Krunk Gym was all about fighting, man. It wasn't about, you know, it wasn't no publicity there. It wasn't a lot of TV there. You know, it wasn't a lot of guys coming from all around the states to be there. You know, it was all about fighters. You know, it was the right place for fighters to be, man. It wasn't like, you know, where the celebrities were. You know, if you calling celebrities the fighters, but you know, initially it was the place where the fighters were, man. All the great fighters wanted to come fight each other to get each other ready and prepared, man. It wasn't commercial though, man. It was nothing commercial about it. Like I said, it was one of those places that was nasty, sweaty, you know, everything about a good gym, you know what I mean? So you probably wouldn't catch the average person being in there. You wouldn't catch Warren Buffett in there, you know what I mean? You probably wouldn't catch, you know, Aretha Franklin in there, you know what I mean? It just was one of those places that it was an athlete's heaven, you know what I mean? And that's what it was all about, man, was good work, good people, great boxers, and everybody trying to get to a certain position. So you had the hungry in there along with the ones that wanted to stay at the top of the sport. So, you know, that's the kind of place it was. You know, it wasn't everybody coming in there, you know, because Miguel Cotto was in there or Chad Dawson was in there. You know, everybody was coming in there to work with him, not to see him or not to watch one person work or, you know, not to watch this particular guy do this or, you know, not a lot of TV. It wasn't no 24/7 back, you know, when I was in there. It wasn't no whatever you want to call it, any kind of television, man. It was all about work, you know what I mean? Emmanuel was all about work. Emmanuel was one that believed that TV shouldn't be in there anyway. So even if TV wanted to come in, he probably wouldn't let it, you know what I mean? Because, he thought it was a distraction to fighters, so... like I said, it was strictly business. You know, Krunk was a place about strictly business. You know what I mean? And that's what it was.
Most definitely. Now, Tony, I want to talk to you a couple of youth topics here. Because to me right now, you know, the youth movement in Detroit, we all know about the decline of Detroit, throughout the years. But we've seen, you know, young men like you giving back to the neighborhood. You know, we kind of seem like people are starting to reinvest in Detroit, especially the natives. We see that, you know, the people are starting to come back. People are starting to think of Detroit in terms other than the United States, I guess, the poor city. Tony, you've been working with some of the youth there. Can you tell us first, you know, you built up quite a record with your youth football program. You went undefeated, I believe, for 3 years up until recently. Kind of tell us about how you got into that.
I got into it because of my cousin. He started it because, you know, all my damn near my whole family has somebody that's you know, youth oriented. You know what I mean? So we started it all because of that. And, you know, I already had a professional cousin inside the sport already, you know, that was from the city of Detroit. So he and a couple other guys, they just gathered each other, man, and said, you know, why don't we just start our own team? And it went from there, you know what I mean? I got involved with it. You know, football was my first love. My cousin knew from me playing back then, you know, who I'm always with, you know, almost every day. He knows football was my first love. He used to watch me play football all the time when I was, you know, when I was coming up. And he asked me to be a part of it, you know, and my first answer was initially, you know, you couldn't buy my, you know what I mean? You couldn't pay me not to say yes, you know what I mean? So I got right into it, man, and, you know, day by day I spent with these kids, you know, I got more attached to it until it was a time where, you know, until it came to this point where I just can't leave it, you know what I mean? Because I'm more of a pleasure to be a part of it than they are for me to be a part of it.
Now, Tony, there's been a lot of controversy lately, you know, about football itself, the game of football, so many injuries, concussions and whatnot. And we've actually, you know, and to me that this was very puzzling because I've grown up around the game, I mean, you know, it's a big part of the fabric of Northeastern Ohio, you know, with the Browns and the Steelers and whatnot. But we've seen a lot of professional athletes say that they would not let their kids play football. Tony, what made you get into, you know, after all of the controversy and everything, what made you go into the sport anyway and put such a positive spin on it?
I mean, I was always based on, you know, that's how I grew up. You know what I mean? I grew up playing football. You know, I was always one of those guys that, you know, I couldn't really play basketball. Well, I could play basketball, but it just wasn't physical enough for me. You know what I mean? That was always my brother's sport. And football, I always liked to hit somebody, man. And you know what I mean? It was just, it was my first love. You know what I mean? And it just, you know, I was attracted to the sport, man. I was attracted to the sport from a young age through my coaches. You know what I mean? I think I had the right people around me. You know what I mean? To teach me the game of football, for me to love it. You know, so I always think that, you know, if you got the right people around you teaching you the right way of the sport, I think you would grow to love whatever sport that you're in. You'll grow to love it, you know, and I had the right people coaching me at that time and teaching me the right ways to do stuff, and, you know, I just grew to like it, you know what I mean? My parents were coming, and then I was a quarterback, I was a star, so it wasn't no reason for me not to like it, you know what I mean? I was scoring all the touchdowns and stuff, so, you know, I just grew to it, you know, hey, it just was no reason for me not to like the sport of football.
Okay, now, tell us a little bit about your team. Like I said, you went undefeated for, I believe, 2 years. You lost your first game recently, and ironically enough, it was after your first loss in the ring. Tony, how did you take those two things and make a positive out of them for your kids?
It was really truly easy. It all connected hand to hand. You know what I mean? It all went together when I lost, and you know what I mean. The kids were kind of, you know what I mean, on my head about me losing it and, you know, joking around with me about losing, you know what I mean, until the shoe flipped. And, you know what I mean, they went from not knowing how to do anything but win to losing. And, you know, you see the looks on their faces. It was just easy because I had just been in that position. So it was pretty easy for me to lift them up because I had already been there. I had just been there, you know what I mean? And I just told him, just, you know, when you love it and when you love a sport, it's always more we can do. You know, it's always another step we can go to get better. And that when a door closes in your life, you don't sit in sorrow. You know what I mean? You just walk down the hallway and trying to find the next door that you can open. You know what I mean? And that's the way life works. You know, we don't sit down and sob over a loss. You know what I mean? We pick ourselves up. We find a way to make it better, and we find a way to get through it, you know, and I think they got it. You know, they have it down pat. You know what I mean? And I, like I said, everything I do, I'm a walking testimony of it because I do it, and they watch me do it. So, you know, they watch me suffer my first defeat, but now they just watch me come right back after that and come become victorious, you know, through hard work. So, you know, it was pretty easy, man. It really worked hand in hand together.
All right, now I'm gonna bring up something rather sad, my man, because, you know, we are talking about football. Man, what the hell is wrong with them Lions?
Man, I have no clue, man. I'm telling you, man, they might need to just go ahead and let me go ahead and start my other career, my next career, and, you know, my next career in life, and get back on the football field, man, because that might be what I need to do, man. Just go ahead and coach them, man, because I'm pretty good at coaching, man. And, you know, I haven't lost a game in 3 years, you know, besides the game I just lost to, which was to a really, really good organization in the city of Detroit that has been around for, you know, 50, 60 years, you know what I mean? Larry Foote, it's the organization Larry Foote came up in the city of Detroit. The guys that play for the Buccaneers right now, the defensive end that went to Michigan State, the running back, Edwin Baker, that went to Michigan State, you know, the likes of damn near everybody, you know, that came from the city of Detroit played for, you know what I mean? So it's a very great organization, man, and you got coaches that's been coaching that team
you know, for 30, 40 years. You know what I mean? That's all they've done is coach. You know, so, you know, it was one of those games, man, that I was a fan of, you know, rather than the coach. You know, I was a fan of the game. We lost in overtime, you know, on a fourth down play. You know, they actually scored on a fourth down play to send it into overtime. So I was a real fan of the game, man. It was a real nice game, man, to watch it. And I don't know what's going on with the Lions, though, man. Like, I truly, truly don't understand it. You know, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, the players are discouraged, man. But I think once they get the ball rolling, man, I think that the momentum will flow with them. You know what I mean? I just think they don't have the momentum right now, and you know, everything is really working against them right now. So I just think they need that momentum to kick in for them, and so they can go in and do what they were doing last year. I don't know if Ndamukong Suh leaving them was the reason why we acting like this, but I just have no clue, man. I think we just got to get it together. Some way, somehow, we got to get it together, though.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Suh, so I'm kind of glad you brought that up. But, I mean, you know, on paper, you still got Calvin Johnson. You added Golden Tate. Running game still has a whole lot to be desired. You know, I mean, Reggie Bush isn't exactly 7 million in San Francisco, so, you know, you can't really put it on that. Hey, let's hope Detroit can turn it around. Of course, I mean, you know, with that record, there's nowhere else to go but up. But, you know, let's stay in the state of Michigan, though, because, hey, you got two hell of a college football teams here. Jim Harbaugh has left the 49ers, and hell, Kaepernick, he doesn't know what to do with himself. He's found his stuff on the bench. But the University of Michigan is rolling on. What did you think about Harbaugh's move to Michigan? And how do you like that team up there in Michigan?
I think Michigan is doing really, really well. I think they always had the players. You know, I used to go up there and watch some games all the time because my other cousin, you know, he just left Michigan to go to the NFL, Devin Funchess, who was a star-studded athlete for Michigan. So I always knew they had the players. You know, it's just about the coaches bringing the best out of them. I think Jim Harbaugh coming in, you know, was just, you know, a true factor of them becoming better, you know, within themselves, you know, and building confidence within themselves. And, you know, I think he's just bringing out the best in them. You know what I mean? He knows how to reach that group of kids. From working with professional athletes, I think he already, you know how to reach those kind of that avenue with that group of kids. You know, he get his respect, and I think that's where it starts. I think the whole group starts with just respecting, you know, your coaches, you know, and I think he's done a tremendous job from last year to this year, and the one game that they did lose was to another great team from the state. And it was a really okey-doke, you know, one-in-a-billion kind of play, you know. So I think he done a great job turning that program around, man. And I think that Michigan will be a force to reckon with. And if not this year, you know, definitely next year because of the star-studded athletes that he's going to get because his name is Jim Harbaugh, you know, to bring them to the city of, you know, to the state of Michigan. So I think they're going to be a force to reckon with, you know, as long as Jim Harbaugh is there.
I'm still hanging my hat with Mr. Urban Myers and the Buckeyes. You know, sorry, man, but you know I got to be loyal. Just like you loyal.
Oh, man, I ain't mad at you, man, because one thing about it, man, I think Big Ten is the most intense division actually in college football. You know what I mean? I think it's just intensified in every level. You got Michigan State, Ohio State, Illinois. You got every all these teams playing at high levels right now. You know what I mean? And you know, in the beginning, it started off like 16 from the Big Ten was top 25 teams in the country. So, you know, I think it's one of the most intensified, you know, divisions in college.
I do too, and I'm glad to see us getting our cred back. But you kind of brushed over it a little bit, but let's talk about that other team over there in Michigan State. You know, they did, you know, pull off that miracle upset, despite what Jamel Hill wants to give him credit for, you know. What do you think about Michigan State there, my man? Who do you think has the upper hand in the state right now, Michigan or Michigan State?
I think even though Michigan State won, I think Michigan has the upper hand. I think, you know, as a sport fanatic, you know, you seen that Michigan was the better team. You know, they dominated the game. They, you know, football is a game of inches. They played by the inches. They played it real well. And they were up the whole game defensively and offensively. They played, you know, a remarkable game, had the game in the bag. But, you know what I mean? Michigan State, you know, they have a great coach, man. And, you know, great teams always find a way to win, you know, no matter how you get it done. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts. But, you know, I just think, you know, that, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. But I still would have to roll with Michigan being a better team, you know, seeing that they turned that program around from, you know, a 500 program to, you know what I mean, a 95% program, you know. And I just don't think that Michigan State team is really as good as they was last year. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I don't see this team beating last year's team. I think that last year team was pretty tough. And, you know, they went on to win the bowl, I think the Cotton Bowl. And I just don't see that team being better than this team, you know. I mean, you know, beating this team. So, you know, they were a really good team last year, and I just don't think they'll be that good this year, you know.
Yeah, I'm you know, we're both of them, well, I know Michigan State has to go through Columbus. I'm not sure whether we're going there or they're coming to Columbus, but hey, we got some good games still to play, and it should be really interesting to see how this plays out in the Big Ten, especially, you know, if something should happen and the Buckeyes have one loss and we have three teams with one loss, it should be very interesting to see how this plays out, especially considering that the playoff right now, as far as the playoff series is concerned, they have Ohio State listed at number four. So it should be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, man, I don't think that Ohio State team is as good as it was last year. You know what I mean? I think that, you know, a lot of games that Ohio State, you know, been winning, they, you know, they squeaked out of a lot of games. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. It's better to be, like I said, better to be lucky than good. But, you know, winners always find a way to win. But I just don't think that team is just as powerful as it was last year. You know, I think they lost a couple key guys. And, you know what I mean? And sometimes I just think that they didn't lose too much talent. But I think when you have too much talent on one team, it's hard to find that rhythm. You know what I mean? It's hard to give it to that one guy because you have too much talent. And I think that's all, that Ohio State team just has too much talent. You know what I mean? So I honestly don't think they're as good as they was last year. And I just, you know, I hope, you know, Big Ten teams wins it, or Big Team 10 wins it. But, you know, for it being Ohio State, I just don't know. I honestly don't think they're going to beat Michigan and Michigan State. I just don't know what team they will lose to. But I honestly don't think they're going to beat both teams.
Well, that's why I said it would be very interesting to see if we have three one-loss teams from the Big Ten, and you know, where I'm not ready to say that Ohio State is not as good as they were last year. What I will say is that there are a lot of teams that are better than they were last year.
You can say that. And you know what? I would take that one. I sure will take that one. That could be it.
But you dropped so many names on me, man. You know, it was you know, like star-studded when you talk about your family and whatnot, man. But you mentioned a name that I have to ask you about because, hey, there's so much riding on this team. And I'm talking about Devin Funchess. And the reason why I talk about Devin, man, is, hey, Carolina won again last night. And man, oh man, you know, hey, maybe I'm just down. Maybe it's just me. You know, maybe I'm just not a Ted Ginn fan. But damn, Cam needs Devin, man. What's up? Is there any injury? You know, what's up with his injury? Is he going to be back to 100% soon? Because, hey, Cam needs another weapon, man. We just can't have Ted Ginn.
He does, but you know what? Like I said, I think he's finding a way to utilize every piece, everybody he has right now. You know what I mean? He's hitting the tight end every chance he gets, and that tight end is playing at a high level. Stewart is running the ball very well, and I think they're playing very, very good balanced football because of them not having such a one punch man to go to. You know what I mean? So I think Cam Newton is spreading the ball out pretty well right now, and I just think they're playing at a high level. I think, you know, as far as Devin, I think, you know, you will definitely see him back on the football field. Football is his love. And, you know, he'll find a way to get himself back on the football field, man. Some way, somehow, he'll find a way to get back on the football field. He's not 100%, but, you know, he'll find a way, man. Athletes always find a way to get back in the sport, you know, some way, somehow. And I think he'll find a way, you know, so that I'm not worried about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it has to be discouraging for him. I mean, Ted Ginn leads the league again and dropped passes. You know, he dropped a pass where, you know, overtime shouldn't have been necessary because, I mean, you know, well, anyway, hey, they won the game. And, you know, good news about Devin, you know, hoping to get him back soon. So, but, hey, let's talk about you, my man, for these last few minutes. Great victory on TV, man. What was it like getting back in the ring, you know, after that loss? And, you know, just tell us about it in general. Did you follow your game plan? Was your opponent a little tougher than you thought? Exactly what was, you know, what went through your mind getting back in the ring after that first loss of your career?
I just wanted to get back in the ring. I was, you know, I was ecstatic to get back in the ring. And as the performance in general, I followed the game plan perfectly. I didn't watch a lot of tape on Cecil at all. You know, I probably watched maybe through the whole camp, maybe 3 minutes of his fights. And I think my jab was the key. You know what I mean? I showed a lot of diversity in my skill game, I think, in this past fight. For 22 fights, you see me pressure guys and you see me knock guys out. And you know, for the 23rd, you know, I think you've seen me diversify myself, you know, and use, you know, exactly what I have to make an easy fight, you know. I truly made that one of my easiest fights, you know. And you know, I made it easy because of my jab. You know, he covered up a lot. I don't even think he was that defensive with none of the other guys he fought, like what's my man for the money team, Ishae Smith. I don't even think he covered up that much. You know, he had a very low work rate because of it. You know, because I had a good jab in his face all night long, a good hard stiff jab, and you know that was hard for him to get past. And you know, I think I made it a very, very easy night. You know, I know fans like to see the Tony Harrison going forward all day, but you know what I mean. At some point, you know, they got to understand that. You know, I'm in it for my health now. You know what I mean? Chapter one was the exciting me. You know, chapter two may be the Tony Harrison that just dominates fights from here on out. You know, may be born or may not be what people want to see. But, you know, it's all in all, I made the fight fun. I mean, I made the fight easy, you know, and I still have fun. I don't think Cece was tougher. You know, I just think he was – I think his defense was just on point. You know, I think he – from round one felt that, you know, at any given time he could be knocked out, you know. And I think that my power hasn't leave. I still have the dog in me. Whenever I need it to come out, it will come out. But I think it's important for me at this point. My only loss became because I didn't follow the game plan. I think it's important for me at this point to just stick with game plans from here on out, you know, and not get sidetracked on trying to fight, you know, exciting fights rather than winning. Because, you know, this, you know, it's better that me and my team is talking, you know, what about what we could have done better, you know, for this fight coming off a win than what we could do different coming off a loss. You know what I mean? So, I think I had a pretty solid performance. All in all, I could have did better. I think if I just would have, you know, sat down just a little more, you know, I could have definitely stopped Cecil. I think that's something I could have done easily. But like I said, I can't take it back. You know, Cecil was a great opponent. He's tough. He's going to be a tough guy to beat, you know, for anybody. But I just don't think you'll see another performance like that against Cecil, against anybody else.
Now, Tony, I got to be a little critical here. We both come from the same mentor, so I'm going to be a little critical. It seems to me that after you put 5 or 6 rounds in the bank, you always have that one round where you seem to lose focus. Did you
fight? Right.
I mean, you know, okay, what do you contribute that to? Is it because the fight gets so easy? Or?
Man, I'm telling you that's what it is, man. I'm telling you. There's no reason to even ask me. I'm telling you that's exactly what it is, man. And I think I just have to stay focused, man, no matter what it is. And like I said, I literally be dominating, you know, the performances be so dominant and so easy for me that, you know what I mean, I just have to stay focused. But like I said, I got sidetracked with Cecil because, like I said, I won't say easy, but, you know, I just was doing everything I wanted to do. You know what I mean? It was no need for change, not one part of the fight, you know, not one round and 1 second of the fight, you know. Change was never needed, you know. So I think that's, you know, that's really what made it kind of like, you know, it sidetracked me a little bit, you know, because it was no need for change, you know what I mean? It just you know, Cecil's inactivity, you know what I mean, was kind of like another way to say it. But Cecil's inactivity, so when he did throw a shot, it was like, okay, you know, he finally threw a shot kind of thing, you know what I mean? So I just think I just need to stay focused, man. And it's not easy because of the opponent in front of me is making it any easier. It's because I'm Tony Harrison is just doing everything Tony Harrison wants to do against these guys, you know, and that's even with Willie Nelson. I think I did everything I wanted to do with Willie Nelson. You know, I think it was one of my easier fights, to be honest. But, you know, like once again, you know, I got sidetracked, and that's what caused me to lose the fight. But, you know, this fight I wanted to stay a little more focused. And, you know, once I had the rounds in the bank, you know, I just didn't want to give it up how I gave it up last time. You know, so I just stayed focused, man. But I did get sidetracked out that one round. He hit me with a nice shot. And I got a little off track of it, you know. But you know, like I said, even that was fun for me, you know. And even when he hit me with that shot, you know, I smiled at him because, you know, finally, you know, you giving me something to, you know, you giving me something to respect, you giving me something to respond to, you know what I mean. So I had a lot of fun with the fight, though, man. You know, if you looked at the fight, I had a lot of fun with it, and I think Cecil was a great opponent. But like I said, I don't think we'll ever see that again. I don't think you'll see nobody dominate Cecil, you know, the way I did, you know, especially with one hand.
Yeah, Cecil is a lot better fighter than a lot of people have given him credit for. So I think people are a little sidetracked with that. But before we let you go, my man, what can we expect in 2016? How many fights would you like to have in 2016? And would you like for one of them to be Mr. Willie Nelson, or are you just ready to move on?
I mean, I know it comes with the sport, man. I think Al knows exactly what I want from it. I think he knows that I would love to fight Willie Nelson again. I'm back on the winning side of the column. A lot of people counting me out. A lot of people, you know, sent a lot of hate towards the after the Willie Nelson loss, and but I'm back focused, man, and I think I'm getting better with time. You know what I mean? I still, you know, people don't realize that, you know, out of my first 21 fights, 18 of them were knockouts, and 16 of them was first, second round knockouts. You know what I mean? So now I feel like I'm becoming a better fighter because of the rounds. It's giving me more experience. You know, I'm getting experience through the rounds that I'm having. You know what I mean? I wasn't fortunate enough to have all those rounds at first, and but I'm becoming wiser with that. You know, with the rounds that I'm getting right now, and you know, I think they're going to expect the best Tony. 2016, you're going to see a totally complete Tony Harrison with you know, boxing and banging and angles and, you know, head movement. I think I'm just becoming a complete fighter with the rounds. You know what I mean? And the rounds is making me better. So I think with the rounds I become more focused and everything else I become more focused. So I think you can expect the best Tony Harrison. I would love to fight Willie Nelson again. I know him and his team are glad they skated with that win that I gave them. But I would love to fight him again. You know, if not, you know, I'm moving forward. With that door closing, like I said, I know I get a better door to open up for me. So whether it's Willie Nelson, I'm going to get somebody top in 2016, and you're going to see the best Tony Harrison perform.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you back on television again. We know that the PBC series they just signed with the Fox Sports Network, and they're going to have more bouts on starting January 23rd. So, hey, man, we look forward to seeing you back on TV on whatever station, whatever network it happens to be on. We will be there. And, hey, man, you know, I do have another show called The Sports Crib. So, you know, I might be inviting you on that, my man. We talk football, basketball. You know, hey, we got to talk about them Pistons a little bit this year, too. Now, you know, looks like they
may be. Anytime you're talking sports, man, you give me a call. Anytime, man. I'm a sports fanatic. I love everything about sports. I love everything about, you know, everything that has something to do with the smell of sports. And so anytime it has something to do with sports, man, give me a call, man. And, you know, especially since you got something to do with it, you know, I'm definitely only a phone call away or a text away, man, from you, you know. So anytime, I'll be, it's my pleasure.
I appreciate it, my man. Hey, we appreciate your time, and I know the guys will be glad to talk to you and you know, rub elbows with a gentleman that knows his sports and you know, is a winner in all phases of life. So thank you so much, Tony, and we look forward to having you back on again soon.
Thank you, champ.
By the way, man, tell everybody where they can find you on social media and anything that you might have going on as far as charity events or anything about your kids.
Well, actually, I got a giveaway for Thanksgiving in the neighborhood, one of the, you know, a neighborhood that truly needs it. We giving back, me and Team Superbad and, you know, a couple other guys, you know, that are fortunate enough to give back. Are coming together, and we're going to give back for Thanksgiving to a grateful neighborhood, Team Superbad, right before Thanksgiving. And I think everybody that wants something to know about Tony can find me on my Instagram at MadeInDetroit1990, or you can just visit my official website at TonySuperbadHarrison.com, where you can, you know, you can see how much work I'm putting in. You know, what I'm doing for the community, and also you're able to buy merchandise, super bad merchandise. So I just would like everybody to look at the website, give me feedback on what you think what you think I can do. I'm always taking feedback on, you know, anything vital to the community, and you know, just reach out to me, man. Even if you are a fan or you just want to talk in general, you know, you can always reach me at TonySuperbadHarrison.com.
All right, my man. You have a great night. And like I said, we look forward to having you back on again very soon.
Anytime for you. Thank you, champ.
All right, my man. Good night.
All right.
Well, everyone, that was Tony Superbad Harrison out of Detroit. Always glad to have him on the show. Great young man, does a lot for his community. But right now I want to get one of the other gentlemen off of that same card. We saw the young prospect, Mr. Caleb Plant. He had a very tough fight, but he was victorious. So let's see if we can get Mr. Plant on the line. Hello, Caleb.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, doing great, my man. Let's I just gave you a little small introduction there, man. We were talking about your television debut. Hey,
debut.
Tell me about it. What was it like, man? You know, getting that call, knowing that you were going to be on TV.
Oh, it was real good. This was actually though like my fourth or fifth time on TV, but yeah, it was a great experience. Another great experience. Hold up, this one thing. My phone's on 1%, and I'm not around the charger right now, so might die. It was definitely a great experience. Had a lot of fun and had a successful night. So now I'm down here in Miami, sparring with Peter Quinlan, helping him get ready for Danny Jacobs. So.
Oh man, you're working with one of the good friends of the show. Peter has been with us since day one. Great friend of the show, and we are looking to get him back on before his big event. But glad to know that you're working out with Mr. Quinlan. But that's not the only big camp that you've been in, Caleb. Tell us about some of the other, even though you've been on the show before, for those that didn't catch you on our last show, tell us about some of the gentlemen that you've been sparring with. You've had some very high-quality names.
Yeah, I've been I work with Demetrius Andrade for two camps. I've done a little bit of sparring with Kovalov. Yeah, been in a couple of pretty high quality camps. It's always good to get that top notch experience, and you know when you go to different places and spar with different people, you know you learn new things. But yeah, it's been a great time.
As a young fighter, tell me which camp were you, I don't want to say impressed, but where did you, I'll put it like, where did you get to find the most work?
Yeah, well, this is my first full day down here in Miami with Peter, but I really enjoyed being in camp with Demetrius Andre. You know, he's a great dude, super humble guy. We were able to build and connect a whole lot and really get to become good friends with him and his whole team. So, yeah, that was probably my greatest experience in camp.
Now, we've also had Dimitri on the show. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, simply because of the track record, don't really know Dimitri or have, you know, somewhat of a warped perspective as far as Dimitri is concerned. Like you were talking about his camp and whatnot, and the great group of people that he has around him, but boxing is a business, and unfortunately he's been a victim of that. But could you tell us a little bit about Dimitri and you know just how you found him? I know it's a very close fraternity, but I mean, you know, it's just like any other circle of life. You know, you have the guys that are known as the good guys. You have the assholes. You have the in betweens. Where would you put Dimitri?
You know, he can be a stern guy when he needs to. You know, he's a good, balanced guy. He's a great father to his children. You know, he treats his team right. He makes sure that they're taken care of. You know, him and his dad are, have been getting along very well, as far as I know, for quite a while now. And, you know, he knows when to turn the switch on and off.
Now, being a young man and from Ashland, Kentucky, you know, how do you stay focused, you know, when, you know, you're making, you know, these great strides, but yet and still you seem to keep, you know, your feet on the ground and you don't let your head get up in the clouds, despite, you know, the great strides that you're making at such a young age?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, yeah. Well, actually, I'm in Tennessee, right outside of Nashville, not Kentucky. But I mean, you know,
I was in Fort Campbell, and sometimes those lines just kind of blur.
yeah, no, you're fine. Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of big goals set, so you know, I'm nowhere close to what I want to accomplish. You know, I made certain milestones, but. Really, we're just getting started, so there's really no reason for me to become ungrounded or unhumble, not to mention, you know, I have a daughter in heaven who's looking down on me every day, expecting me to carry myself a certain way, and I promised her that I would, and I'm going to continue to keep that promise to her. And, you know, she had a lot of letdowns here while she was on Earth, and I'm not going to add to those letdowns by acting a certain way and by not fulfilling my promises that I made her. So, you know, I keep that in mind every day when I wake up, when I head to the gym, and when I'm heading home from the gym, about the goals that I promised her that I'm going to get done. So there's no reason for me to become ungrounded, because that's only going to, you know, diminish or hurt me from accomplishing those things I need to get done.
Yeah, now, speaking from, you know, like you said, you know, you mentioned your daughter in heaven. They also mentioned, they kind of mentioned it during the fight. Caleb, you speak, you know, I mean, we can hear the emotion in your voice when you speak of your daughter and your career. Have you embraced the two to where, you know, one is dedicated to the other?
Say that one more time.
Well, I guess basically what I'm asking is, you know, the fact that you dedicate your career to your daughter that's passed, how much more extra motivation is that to you?
I mean, I dedicate every breath to my daughter. You know what I'm saying? My whole life is based around making my daughter proud. And it's not just boxing. You know what I'm saying? Inside the ring, outside the ring, any and everything I do is dedicated to making her proud of me. So, yeah, I mean, obviously that carries extra motivation, not necessarily pressure, but definitely motivation. But, you know, if you've seen the fight, you know, I had her bathed in my head. I had her on my trunk. I had her on my jacket. I got her tattooed on me. I mean, my whole life revolves around making her proud and getting the things done that I need to get done. And I wake up every morning with that mindset. So, yeah, it definitely adds motivation.
Tell us a little bit about how that plays over into your relationship, you know, with your wife, knowing, you know, that she's always been dedicated to your career, knowing the trials and tribulations that you both have went through together. Tell us how this has made you stronger as a couple.
I thought it had, but just recently she had made the decision to go her separate way and do, you know, her own thing. So, you know, it was kind of a big shock to me. But at the end of the day, you know, that's the mother of my child, and, you know, Aaliyah would want her to be happy. So if that's not with me, then, you know, I guess she needs to, it would be good for her to go out there and find someone who can make her happy. But no, I'm a single man.
Well, unfortunately, we weren't notified of that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked you such a delicate question.
You're fine.
Well, you know, I don't want it to appear insensitive. I mean, you know, you are, you know, what we consider a friend of the show. As far as I'm concerned, it might sound funny, but I kind of liken you to another great friend of the show and a gentleman that really got me started off in this business, and that's Mr. Paulie Malignaggi. Now, I don't know whether you're familiar with his style or whether he's one of the guys that you really follow, but your determination and grit, with the amount of talent that you have, you remind me so much of him in the fact that your dedication to the sport and the way that you carry yourself as a gentleman in and out of the ring. Caleb, is that a good analogy? I mean, do you feel good about that, or am I off base here?
No, most definitely. You know, I try to carry myself a certain way, and I try to be cordial. You know, I try to be nice. Some people won't allow you to be nice. You know, and I'm not the type. You know, I'm not the white kid who grew up in the suburbs. So, you know, I have a switch that I can turn on and off. You know, I'm not fake, but at the same time, when it's time to handle business, then I put on my business suit and I handle business. That don't mean that I'm causing trouble outside the ring, but I'm not just going to let somebody talk some certain type of way, you know, to me, or, you know, just act however they want towards me. I'm going to try to remain cordial and be professional and be a businessman. And, yeah, I think Paulie does a great job of that. You know, he's very intellectual in the way he speaks. And, you know, I try to do the same when I film my interviews or whatever it may be. So if you're comparing me in that sense, then, you know, I consider that a great compliment. I try to be well-spoken, and, you know, that's how my father raised me, my grandparents raised me. So, you know, I appreciate you, you know, noticing that. You know, I don't want to disappoint my daughter in any way. So, yeah, I most definitely try to carry myself in a certain manner. So.
Well, I mean, you know, even, you know, your post-fight interview, you know, I like the way you handle yourself. You know, I mean, you know, you spoke about your parents and grandparents. Would you like to talk a little bit about your upbringing and tell people, you know, like what has you grounded in life and the reason why, you know, you are the kind of plant that you are today?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we grew up rough. Like, you know, I never had a bed growing up. I just slept on the floor. I had a little couch in my room for a short time that I slept on. You know, we didn't always have heat in the winter and in the summer. You know, sometimes we was wondering when the lights was coming on. You know, we didn't always have food. And my dad, he worked a lot, so we went and stayed with my grandparents a lot. You know, so, yeah, there was a lot of rough times. But, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like that kind of made me the man who I am and pushed me to give my to give Aaliyah a better life and, you know, also as well my future kids. Children to give them a better life, but yeah, definitely wasn't like suburb type. You know, there's a lot of things I've done in the past that, you know, I'm not very proud of, but it got me here today and it made me who I am today. So, you know, I never shy away from that. I'm not gonna turn my cheek when people you know, especially in person, you know, come up to me and want to talk about certain things. You know, I'm an open book when it comes to someone coming up and trying to relate with me, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who can relate to struggle. And, you know, I want people to look to me. I want people to look to me when they think of somebody who came from struggle but is still, you know, accomplishing their dreams and, you know, staying determined and staying motivated, you know, because there's a lot of people out there who can relate to struggle. And when they look to someone in the boxing world, I want them to look to me to know that, you know, I came from the very bottom. I really came from the bottom. You know, and now I'm traveling the world, living out my dreams at 23 years old. You know, I got my own place, my own car. You know, I make great money doing what I love. I came from nothing, man. You know, holes in the walls, freezing cold in the winter, no food. You know, that stuff a lot of people only hear about in movies or reading books. And that was what I was really living in, you know. Was it a horrible situation? Yeah. And did I hate it at the time? Yeah. But in hindsight, it made me who I am today, and it gave me the work ethic that I have.
Yeah, and that's what's most important. The young man that you are today, we all had our struggles and whatnot, But Caleb, let's talk a little bit about your fight here, my man. You went into a fight against Mr. Brunson, and Brunson had more knockouts than you had fights. Were you apprehensive?
Yeah, he had twice as many knockouts as I had fights.
Precisely. His record really reflected. I mean, you were really thrown in deep water. A lot of people, you know, always say, you know, that these Al Haymon fights and whatnot are overmatched, and you guys are put up against, you know, guys that you're supposed to beat. But, man, you know, first of all, tell us about, you know, your fight against Mr. Brunson, how you, you know, what you felt you needed to do. I mean, you did win by unanimous decision. Tell us how you planned for the fight. And, you know, talk to us a little bit about that fallacy, you know, that you guys that are over there in that corner get the easy walk over victories.
Yeah, I mean, I know sometimes Al Haymon catches a bad rap for that, but, you know, we're not looking, you know, my last fight, the guy had more than twice the fights I had, and a lot of knockouts as well. I'm not really looking for no soft touches, confident in my skills, and I know that I train hard. And I believe the fights are won in preparation. And, you know, we prepare very well. We prepare equally as well just, you know, for every fight. We're not training to win six-round fights. We're training to win 12-round fights. We're not training to beat these guys. We're training to beat the best. And, you know, we knew he was a tough, it was going to be a tough opposition. We knew he was a veteran and had a lot of fights and had been in, you know, some 10-round fights and a couple 10-round fights. So it was just a go in and stay relaxed and composed and do the things we worked on in training camp and stay behind our jab. And, you know, that's what we did. And we had a successful night. So.
One thing that impressed me because as you said afterwards, you know, is that, you know, a lot of your fights are going to go the distance. You know, people, you know, shouldn't come thinking that, you know, it's going to be a lot of knockouts because, you know, you are more of a technician than anything else. Caleb, what do you see for yourself coming up in 2016?
This is my sixth fight this year, and we're looking to have one more in December. So, you know, this has been a really busy year for me. I've been in training camp basically all year long. You know, I don't really take breaks. We want to stay ready so we don't have to get ready. So we're looking to have one more fight, which will make my seventh fight just this year. As far as calling anybody out, I don't really feel like there's a need for me to call anyone out or, you know, that's not really my time or my style. So whatever Al and Luis feel is best, that's what we'll do. And looking to get one more good fight in this year and then, you know, start fresh next year and continue to, you know, move up the ranks and get some big fights.
Yes, I mean, you are in a tough division fighting in that middleweight division. Caleb, is that where you intend to stay your career at the middleweight division, or, you know, being the young man that you are, do you possibly see yourself moving up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got a pretty big frame for middleweight, so you know, I'm young, so we're gonna stay here as long as it's healthy, and then when it's time, we'll move up and, you know, put in the work we need to at super middleweight. So
like I said, you know, we look forward to seeing you in the ring. You have a very intriguing style, you know, and we look forward to the days when you know, you move up in competition and make yourself a well-known name in the heavyweight, in the middleweight division. Caleb, final words, tell our listeners anything that you might have coming up, any events that you might want, that you're a part of, that you might want to promote, or, you know, and where they can find you on any type of social media.
Yeah, most definitely. I appreciate everybody's support. And, you know, everyone who's been able to tune into my fight so far, I hope that they keep supporting me. You guys can follow me at Caleb Plant on social media, at Plant Caleb on Twitter. And like I said, you know, we're working hard, training hard, looking to get back in December. I hope you guys are able to tune in and keep following my career, and God bless.
Most definitely. And as soon as, you know, we can find out your opponent or what card you're on, my man, you know, we're always glad to give you a little bit of airtime. And, hey, we look forward to having you back on the show.
Yes, most definitely, man. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Thank you, Caleb, man. And, hey, keep up the good work.
Yes, most definitely, man. Be careful.
Well, everyone, that was young middleweight prospect, Mr. Caleb Plant. You got a chance to watch him on the PV series this weekend. Whenever you get a chance, whenever you see his name on a card, make sure you get out and support him. And don't forget his different social media. Right now, we're going to close out the show with our young prospect out of Florida. Actually trained by a good friend of the show, Mr. John Scully. He was also victorious this last weekend. I believe it was in Hialeah. But let's get Mr. Miguel Cruz on the line and see what the young man has to say for himself. And we're going to talk a little bit about that for Florida boxing program and what it means to these young men now that they're having more opportunities down there in the state of Florida.
Seven, 7-7-3-5-2.
It seems we're having a little trouble getting Mr. Cruz on the phone. Let's see if I can get through again. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we do have the welterweight prospect, Mr. Miguel Cruz, on the line. So let's get this segment on the road. Mr. Cruz, how are we doing tonight, my man?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. A little wet out here in Southern California. Despite the fact that everybody thinks it doesn't rain out here in Southern California, this is one of the 3 days of the year that we do get it. So,
wow, holy crap. That's totally opposite. Oh, totally opposite from Florida.
Well, hey, you know, that's one thing about San Diego is that, yes, we do have some of the best weather in the world. So, you know, this is weather-wise, you can't ask for a better place. It is California, so, you know. But speaking of that, how's the weather down there in southern Florida, my man?
It's absolutely fantastic, man. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. The autumn is perfect. Still, you know, it's not too hot to the point where you can't run in the mornings, but at the same time, it's nice and cool. It's not cold either, because I'm not with the cold, man. It's good weather, but it definitely does rain quite often out here in Florida.
Yeah. You know, like I said, that's kind of the thing that we don't have to have a whole lot of worry about. We do get some, but not that much, but man, let's talk about that boxing, what's happening down there in Florida. PBC is opening up a lot of doors down there.
Definitely.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your last fight. Was it in Hialeah?
No, my last fight was at UCF. It was at the University of Central Florida. It was a PBC card. Tony Thompson fought Malik Scott in the main event. And I fought Arthur Brazy. So I got the knockout in the first round, thank God.
Well, you didn't get a whole lot of work. So for people that's not familiar with your work, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your record, what got you into the sport of boxing, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm not your conventional guy. I'm not really like I've ever really need to box growing up as a kid. I grew up pretty much wealthy. My father is an emergency physician. I grew up in the suburbs of Lake Mariner till I was about 16. But ever since I was about, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, I always wanted to fight, you know, I always wanted to box. It was always in me. And I always asked my father, you know, I would always tell him, I'd be like, you know, can I box? Let me box, Dad, let me box. He said, no, he would never let me. So one day he was like, you know, he took me to a Taekwondo place. And, you know, I started doing Taekwondo, and I would always, you know, hated it. And I would always be like, I mean, I like to fight. I was a spar, so I like to fight. And I did a lot of fights. I went to the National Junior Olympics, and I got my black belt. My father told me, though, I always wanted to quit because I always wanted to box. And my father told me, if you get your black belt, I'll let you box. So the day I got my black belt, I brought it to my father, and I told him, okay, now it's my time. You know, like, I want to box. Finally, when I was 12 years old, we started looking for boxing gyms. You know, I lost my first 2 amateur fights when I was about 13 years old. I went to my current trainer, O'Neill Watson. And so ever since then, it's been a whole different journey. But when I was 17, I moved to Puerto Rico. And then over there, I made the national team. I fought internationally a bunch of times. I did about 80 amateur fights. Then I moved back here about when I was 21. I went to the National Golden Gloves in Indianapolis, where I lost to Tony Harrison in the quarterfinals. And I fought Brian Perella throughout that whole, you know, and I fought a lot of the top guys. I had about 80 amateur fights, I think it was. I was probably like 65-15, which was that record. And then, you know, that was it. And then I turned professional on December 5th, 2012. And it was difficult getting fights at first. You know, I even fought one time literally for free in Puerto Rico just to, you know, just to move and just to get the record. You know, it was starting to get harder to get fights as the time progressed. And then one day I got the call to go to training camp with Adrian Broner. And then I went out there and I actually got to spar spar him for his fight for John Molina. And I gave him great work. And the vice president of Al Haymon Promotions was there that day. And that's when he caught a glimpse of me. And everybody, you know, I got the contract the very next day.
Oh, my man, you know, in some ways it kind of sounds like a Cinderella story, but, you know, you're kind of following in the footsteps of two gentlemen. Triple G, you know, I mean, here's another man that, you know, comes from a fairly wealthy family, didn't really have to go into boxing. Another gentleman that Beboot Shumanov. His family was heavily into banking. Another gentleman that turned out to be a light heavyweight champion, still fighting, but a gentleman that, you know, not fighting because of a need for money or, you know, a need to vindicate themselves.
Absolutely. But the love of the game.
Precisely. What was it like for a young man? You know, you go into Adrian Broner's camp. You know, you get to work out with Adrian and you know, you get around these guys. And then the next guy, I mean, the next day, you're signed by Al Haymon. I mean, what does that do for a young man? And you know, I mean, how do you keep grounded knowing that you've garnered this much attention already in your career?
It's an incredible feeling, to be totally honest with you. It's surreal. You know, I mean, I know to me in my mind, I basically ground myself by telling myself I haven't done anything yet, you know. I haven't done anything yet. I really haven't in my mind, you know. As far as I'm concerned, this is nothing. I mean, compared to what I want, compared to what I'm going to do, you know. And so that's kind of what I keep focus on, because 11-1 is just, you know, everybody forgets about me. So I can't be 11-1. I have to be 12-0. That's the focus. That's the goal. I'm not worried about a belt. I'm worried about 12-0. That's it. That's my only focus is the next step. The next step is to be 12-0. And being out there with Adrian Broner, being out there with, you know, with all those guys that realistically the only time I've ever seen them was on TV, you know, and being out there with them and in there with them and training with them and watching the way Adrian Broner was training, it was incredible. I never seen anybody train as hard as that guy, to be honest with you. And then, so it motivated me, you know, to take it to the next level, because I know if I want to get to the level that he's at, that's what I have to do. I have to be willing to put myself through everything they're putting themselves through, because, you know, I'm not the most talented guy. You can't consider yourself, there's just going to be guys more talented than you, but That's why you got to work harder than them. That's it.
Now, you know, it's funny that you talk about that, because my first guest tonight was Mr. Tony Harrison. My second
That's hilarious.
But my second guest was Mr. Cato Plant. And the reason why I bring this up, well, you and Caleb actually, I believe, had the same number of fights. He's 12-0 now. You're 11-1. Now, Miguel,
no, I'm
what
11
I want to ask.
I'm 11-0. Still in the field.
Well, what I want to ask, you know, because we've talked about this. I've talked about this with numerous trainers. Ronnie Shields, Barry Hunter, a lot of guys. Do we put too much emphasis on that O?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My opinion, absolutely. My opinion is that O doesn't mean shit, you know? Excuse my language. It doesn't mean anything, you know?
We're over 21 here, so we're fine. Well, 13-0.
All
right, we're
PG-13. Yeah, cool. It doesn't mean anything, you know. Look at Orlando Salido. I mean, that's a perfect example of a tough guy who was a great fighter who just had a hard up-and-coming career. But what happened when he fought Juan Manuel Lopez, who was our guy, the Puerto Rican guy, undefeated, the superstar, beat the crap out of him. You know, he beat the crap out of him twice. The O means nothing. It depends. I mean, it could. You know, Triple G's O is very significant. Mayweather's O is very significant, you know. It all depends on the quality of opposition that you've, you know, faced, really. But there are guys out there that are 15-3 that are great fighters, you know. One example of a guy who has some losses that's really good is Tevin Farmer. He's spectacular, but he has losses. He's got some losses, you know, but he's better than a lot of undefeated guys that you might see out there. So the O, in my mind, doesn't mean anything. And I feel like a lot of guys are scared to take risks because of losing that O, and that actually is hurting boxing because of that fear. You know, I feel like a fighter should not have that fear, you know. A fighter should be willing to fight the best and wanting to fight the best. Of course, you know, it's your life, you know. So you have to, you know, be careful about the fight you take and when you take them. But at the same time, it can't be because you're scared to lose that O, because that O is just a number. That's all it is. It's just a number. In my opinion.
Well, that's the opinion that counts, because that's who we ask. We ask you for your opinion. But now I'm going to ask you another compelling question to me, because I've talked to a lot of trainers that are affiliated with the U.S. Amateur Boxing Program, and you've been through the, like you say, you represented Puerto Rico. But you also came to the United States and you represented the United States. Can you give us a little contrast between the two amateur programs?
Okay, yeah, I can definitely give you a big contrast. It was much different. When I fought in USA Boxing, I came back from Puerto Rico. It was actually easier for me to fight here because the scoring USA Boxing, they would have judges and they would be doing paper scoring. So it was you would see bad decisions, but it wasn't as bad or as blatant. Now, when I fought in Puerto Rico, when I did all my fights, I fought in all national tournaments. And back then it was the point scoring, where it was three judges had to touch a button at the same time after you throw a punch to be scored. And then you would see the screen, and a lot of the screen was facing the crowd. So, for example, if it was the fighters go to their corner, when we would fight, we would go to our corner, and our corner would tell us, okay, you're down 3-2. You're losing by 1 point. You got to get that point back, you know. They didn't ever count body shots. Body shots were not counted ever. So it really deterred you from using body work, and it took away from that's why I feel like a lot of Puerto Ricans don't really go to the body that much, because it was just kind of instilled in that amateur program, that amateur system. It was body work was useless. They didn't really count jabs. It was like only clear punches, you know, it was very hard to get points in that system. You would be able to just cover up and you know, block everything, and you would not get scored on. It was very, very difficult. And it was just some people had the style for it, some people didn't. And then in the contrast for the USA boxing, USA boxing counted the body shots. USA boxing, the fights were more entertaining, and it was a different kind of boxing because when you go to the corner, it's still just like a fight. You know, you don't know who's winning, you don't know anything. If you're going into the third round in Puerto Rico and you're up by 5 points, you know that you're up, so your corner is going to tell you to run. Your corner is going to tell you to run and protect your lead and move because you're winning. You don't want to get caught with something stupid and lose the lead. Now, in contrast to USA boxing, you're going into the third round, even if you're winning by 20 points, you don't know the score. So you're going to go in there and fight your ass off. You know? So the fights were better and the fights were more quality in the sense of, like, you know, entertainment-wise. But that amateur system, AIBA, because Puerto Rico won by AIBA, the rules by AIBA, and it was just – it wasn't for me. I hated fights, to be honest with you.
But yet and still – the amateurs are the foundation of, you know, what we consider, I mean, you know, making
absolutely,
a pro,
definitely, very know. Important, very important learning experience. It's more of a game. I feel like amateur boxing is more of a game than the pros. You turn it, especially with that point system, you're just trying to outpoint the guy. You know, if you knock somebody down, they get up, it's just a point. It's just a regular punch. And they hit you two jabs, they're beating you 2-1, and you knock them down. But it's all about a game. It's just a game. It's a chess game. Who's better at playing chess? But in the pros, it's also a chess game, but then there's other factors that come into it, like power is the ultimate factor, speed, point. I mean, you could be hitting somebody a million times, and all of a sudden you get caught one shot, you know? And that's it. You lose 10-8 that round if you get dropped, you know?
Now, one of the things that they seem to have dropped in the USA boxing is the headgear. Miguel, do you think that was a good idea? I mean, even though, you know, we encourage the pro style, I mean, we see, you know, so many accidents in boxing now. I mean, you know, we've seen what just happened with, you know, Pritchard Cologne, you know.
Yeah,
and, I mean, without that, do you think that this is putting the amateurs at too much risk too soon?
Yeah, absolutely. Just to get out of my state in the Golden Gloves, I had to fight 4 times, you know. And internationally, when I would go to other countries to fight, like Venezuela, you know, you're fighting like the Cuban, the Russian, the Canadian Olympian, the Mexican Olympian. You know what I mean? And you got to fight every day, back to back to back, 5 times in a row. So you're fighting the best fighters in the world, back to back to back to back, with no headgear, for no money. Are you kidding me? How stupid does that sound when I put it that way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially...
Right? It doesn't make any sense,
like,
at all. It doesn't make any sense at all. People come out cut. It's just ridiculous. It's dangerous. I think it's a bad idea. And, I mean, that's just my opinion. And if you're really a high-level amateur, you might as well go pro. You might as well go pro. They're encouraging fighters to just go pro, in my mind.
But when let's look at the other side of this. When you speak of, you know, it encourages them to go pro, but it encourages you to go pro without the experience. I mean, you know,
very true.
I mean, it seems like you're caught between a rock and a hard place.
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like even though it's not the safest thing and it's not the best choice, I still feel like an amateur background and an amateur foundation is important. I fought 7 Olympians. You know, I didn't beat all of them, but, you know, that experience that you got, you know, when you're young and you're a kid and you're fighting these grown men, Olympians, 28-year-old, 3-time Olympian I fought, you know, and those kind of experiences are what you go into the pros with a solid foundation, you know, because you're not going to start in the pros. You're not going to have your pro debut against an Olympian, you know. You know, not supposed to, but, you know, that's the point. Boxing, professional boxing is different, but at the same time, it definitely, I think, even if you're not having the headgears, even without the headgear, you should definitely encourage your amateur fighters to go to nationals to try to make it as far as they can. But just now that there's no headgears, definitely you don't want to stay in that too long. Now, I mean, the good thing about amateur boxing is if you start young, but if you start at an older age, once the headgears come off, it, you know, it becomes a little dangerous. And then at that point, if you're a grown man, you know, you should probably go pro. But for the kids, at least they still got headgear, which is the most important thing. Because that's where the real foundation comes from.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And that's why, you know, I'm so interested in our amateur program and what we're doing with these kids, you know, because, you know, like I said, they are the future of boxing.
They absolutely are the future.
Now, kind of staying in those same lines, you know, you've come up in kind of a different age, a different era in boxing, so to speak, because we remember back in the old days, you know, well, I'll say back in the 90s, maybe the early 2000s, you know, when we talked about the Europeans and, you know, how, you know, they were great amateurs, but they couldn't make the crossover.
Yes.
From the amateurs to the pros, especially in the United States. But now we see totally the opposite. You have Lomachenko, gentleman with over 300 fights. He's a champion.
Absolutely.
after three fights. We see Gennady Golovkin.
You got that Arthur Bedrov guy or whatever his name is.
Yeah, so we've seen all of these guys, a lot of Europeans. You know, now we have some of the English guys coming over here. Lee Selby.
Absolutely. Kendall Brook.
You
got Kendall Brook. You got Vladimir Klitschko. You got, you know, you got
precisely.
A lot of Arthur. You got Kovalev, Sergey Kovalev.
Right. So
absolutely,
so,
they
so
are
what
definitely.
What I want to ask you, Miguel, is why is it now that the European fighters seem to be dominating pro sport, pro boxing, like they used to do the amateur boxing? Is it a lack of American competition on the amateur level, or is it the fact that these guys get so much amateur training over there that once they come over here, now we are not as good as we used to be, just to put it bluntly?
I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, I don't know if it's exactly that we're not as good as we used to be, but I definitely do believe that it is that the Europeans have gotten a lot better. The European amateur program is really, really good. Kazakhstan, you know, Russia, you know, all the European countries. I'm not gonna say Italy, but you know, definitely Ukraine, you know, those countries right there that maybe back in the day weren't really known at all for boxing or have, since 2004, 2000, have just completely changed the game, man. They've produced amazing athletes. And honestly, every time I watch the Olympics, those are the teams you look out for in international competition. The Russians, the Ukrainians, the Kazakhstan, those are guys that, you know, you hear that country, and if you know you're up against that country, you're like, oh, shit, I'm in for a fight, you know? That's the kind of mentality that they've imposed. Their amateur program is ridiculous. I feel like the difference between their amateur program and probably the United States amateur program, or at least definitely the Puerto Rican amateur program, which was the one that I was mainly a part of, the Puerto Rican amateur program, they don't really pay the fighters. The federation and the commissions don't really have the backing that the Russian commission probably has, you know, and or the Kazakhstan. Those guys live like kings. I'm telling you, those guys live like kings. They're treated like gods. They have everything they need. They're paid. They're making a living off of amateur boxing. They are professional amateurs. So that is the difference. That's why you see a lot of these guys like Lomachenko turning professional at 28, 27. You can't expect somebody in over here in the United States, they don't really pay like that. That's why you see our Olympic team is maybe 17, 18-year-old kids fighting Russians or Ukrainians who are 26, 27-year-old men. And, you know, and men with 350 fights compared to our 18-year-old kids who are talented. But, you know, in like our last Olympic team, we didn't do very well because they were all young. Now, granted, there are still very good fighters. Saddam Ali was on that team, but Saddam Ali got spanked. You know, he didn't do well in the Olympics. He's doing very well now, but now he's a grown man. Back then, he was a kid fighting a guy who was, you know, big and strong and just fully developed. That to me is the big difference, I think, that makes them a little more well-schooled. And since they're putting a lot more money into their programs in Europe, you know, then that's actually why they've gotten so much better, you know. I know they started bringing Cuban coaches to Russia to help them as well.
Well, you know, I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen. You know, now we're trying to reopen diplomatic relationships with Cuba. You know, we have some great Cuban fighters here. Here's Landy Lahr, you know, Guillermo Rigondeaux. So, you know, it should be, you know, I'm interested to see where that goes, considering, you know, what's happened, like you say, with some of the programs like Kazakhstan and whatnot. So it should be great to see exactly, you know, what kind of influence this program is going to have, the Cuban program is going to have, if any. But let's talk a little bit about your last fight there. Tell us a little bit about your opponent and what can we expect from you in 2016, my man?
I was supposed to fight this Dominican named Jonathan Batista. He fought Kermit Cintron and the record is 15-7. But unfortunately, 2 days before the fight, his daughter died. Passed away, so he didn't take the fight. I mean, obviously, and so we had to look for an opponent last minute, and it ended up being a guy from Philadelphia. His name is Arthur Abrazy, and he was 4-3 with 3 knockouts. And so, you know, from the first round, he came in a little heavy. He was about 156. They changed the weight division of the fight because normally I was supposed to fight Batista at 150. But since he took the fight on late notice, you know, he was just a little heavier. But he did have a fight already coming up, so it wasn't like he wasn't training. He just basically, instead of taking the other fight, he took the fight with me. And so, but he came a little heavy. He came in at 155.5. But no, from the very beginning, I just used my jab, dictated the pace real quick, and I caught him with double left hook, and that's actually what ended up finishing the fight. And but what to expect of me in 2016? To be honest with you, I should actually, I got offered today. I'm looking like, you know, I'm going to be fighting on the 28th of November in Hialeah. I think actually it's going to be on the Irislandi Lara card. And so I'm going to be on that undercard on November 28th, which is 3.5 weeks. I'll be back in the ring. And, you know, so right now that's my main focus. But in 2016, you know, it's going to be a big year for us. You know, that's the plan is supposed to be to fight November 28th and then again January 4th. But right now, you know, we're just focused on, you know, November 28th. I got to start basically getting that weight down, and just I'm already in great shape. But, you know, just make sure I'm ready, ready, ready.
Well, you know, according to, you know, all signs, PBC is going to be signing with Fox Sports. So we're going to have more boxing on TV starting January 23rd. So hopefully we'll get to see you on the big screen. And Miguel, before we let you go, tell everybody any social media that you might have, any special projects you might have coming up for the holidays. Just last words for our audience before we let you go.
All right, I just want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen, and I also want to let you guys know that you could find me on Instagram at MiggyC90 and on Twitter at MiggyC1990. Thank you for you know, the opportunity to let me speak, and I really appreciate it very much. November 28th, 12-0.
Well, hey, if you're fighting November 28th, then that means that we'll have to make room for you right around the 1st of December because we're sure that you're going to come out victorious again. You're a pleasure to talk to, young man, and we look forward to having you back on the show. Maybe we can get you on the co-host one night.
Absolutely, and I'll be honored to do that. Thank you very much for the opportunity, my friend. Have a good night.
You too. Have a good night, Miguel. Right. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much.
Well, everyone, that was a young welterweight prospect, Mr. Miguel Cruz. We'd like to thank all our guests, Mr. Tony Harrison, also Caleb Plant. Thank everyone for listening, and we look forward to talking to you next week on the Pugilist Corner. And don't forget to catch us Sunday on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great night, everyone. You can catch the Sports Grid Thursday. Talk to you next week. Ooh.